All right.
Go ahead.
Hi, Heather.
Hi, Dimitri.
I have this.
Where have you been hiding out? I haven't seen you in a while.
Just swamped.
Just swamped.
With work.
Well, you're in the right city then, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Listen, I have this softball question about.
You never do.
About next.
Dimitri's from Russia. You can't tell.
Secretary Tillerson all but announced his trip next week to ministerials in Brussels and Vienna to NATO and OSCE. I wanted to ask if he is meeting, if there is a plan to meet with Foreign Minister Lavrov in Vienna.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I know that we have announced, we've announced, the secretary discussed that he will be going to Europe next week. We are still working out the exact details of that meeting and the meeting schedule that he will have, so I just don't have any specifics for you on that. But as soon as we have that all nailed down, then I'll be sure to let you all know.
And if I can also ask you about North Korea, the interdiction measure that you mentioned, and which was mentioned yesterday in the statement, have you run this idea by the Chinese and the Russians?
I know that we have, let me check something quickly. I believe the secretary has some calls with China and Russia pending. So I don't have an answer for you on that. As you know, this was a new announcement yesterday as we talk about interdiction. However, the issue of maritime interdiction was incorporated into one of the last UN Security Council resolutions. So there is language that pertains to the maritime interdictions. It appears that this will be a new level of maritime interdictions, but yet some of those details are still being worked out. I don't want to get in ahead of the secretary's calls that he has pending with other foreign leaders or those conversations. Okay.
Yeah. Peter, nice to see you again.
Hi, sir.
My name is Mason Bazou from TG Ethiopian Television and Radio. I have a question about Ethiopia and Egypt. The Ethiopian Nile River Dam threatens war between Egypt and Ethiopia. And as we heard, Ethiopia also blames Egypt that Egypt has begun a covert war against Ethiopia to disrupt the construction of the Nile Dam, which Egypt denies. Egypt fears that Ethiopian dam will cut into its water supply. But Ethiopia often says that the dam is essential to its development and has repeatedly sought to assure Egypt. But recently, Egyptian President El-Sisi stated that water is a matter of life and death. No one can touch Egypt's shares of water. Despite President's talk, Ethiopia is finalizing the construction of the Nile Dam on the Blue Nile. Instead of provocations of a water war, these two countries must resolve a long-running Nile water dispute through dialogue. Since Ethiopia and Egypt, as you know, are strong allies of the United States, so far, what are the U.S. efforts to assist both countries so that they resolve the Blue Nile Dam conflict peacefully?
Well, first let me say, we recognize, the United States recognizes what an important matter water rights and water issues are. I have a quick question for you, and then I'll answer. How, to what extent is this being reported? You're from Ethiopia.
Yes.
How big of an issue is this? Do people, you know, regular folks in Ethiopia regard this?
Oh, it's really a very, very, very big issue.
It gets a lot of coverage.
It's a lot of coverage, and right now, most people in Ethiopia, even Ethiopians who live abroad, they say that in order to disrupt the Nile construction, as you know, Ethiopia, there is a lot of unrest, a lot of movement going on, which ended up
a big deal. I understand.
And a lot of people are dying because of. But now they complain that, you know, Egypt is behind it. But as I say, my question is: before it gets out of hand, what is the United States doing to us is both countries.
Here's what I can tell you. Dams play an important role in managing water resources and meeting energy needs as well. At the same time, they can have a profound impact on people and also the environment. Any decision concerning the dams must be based on best science available and made in the best interests of the affected population and should incorporate the views of all stakeholders. That would include both Egypt and Ethiopia. We do not have a position on the Comprehensive Framework Agreement, known as the CFA, but we do believe that the management of shared water must be done on a cooperative basis with the engagement of all the countries. Okay. That's all I have for you on that, sir. Yeah.
One last question, I think.
Sure.
Okay.
Thank you. My name is Simon Ateba from Today News Africa. My question is on Libya. What's the U.S. reaction to a report that once again black Africans are being sold into slavery in Libya? Mm-hmm. And finally, I would like to react to the transition in Zimbabwe and to a larger extent, what's the U.S. policy in dealing with people, African leaders who have been in power for a long time, like President Paul Biya of Cameroon, who has been there for 35 years, Obiangema Mbazogo of Guinea, who has been there for 38 years, and all of them. How will the Trump administration relate with these people who have been in power for almost 3-4 decades?
Well, thank you. We support democracies, of course. So the United States is not going to force someone out of power as a general matter. I'll have to take your question bit by bit, and some of those we'll have to get back to you on because you brought up a lot of various countries and various leaders, and I want to make sure I get you the correct answer. In terms of Zimbabwe, we had been concerned by recent actions that were undertaken by Zimbabwe's military. We recognize that there was a democracy, and we've seen that democracy went in the right direction. In terms of Libya, and you asked about slave people being sold into slave labor, I certainly saw that report and is a major concern to the United States, a major concern to any human being when we hear of something like that that is happening in this day and age. I don't have any diplomatic conversations to provide to you at that time. I would imagine that that is an issue that the United States is reviewing very carefully and having conversations with its counterparts about.
Okay. That was our last question.
Oh, okay. Well, we'll take one last question. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay.
Ukraine.
One last question. Okay.
Who said Ukraine?
Ukraine.
Okay.
Hi. How are you?
Yeah, hello. Thank you very much for this opportunity to get the information from the first source. Well, I'd like to ask, not first.
I just help facilitate.
Well, anyway, we've got a lot of speculation.
My boss is the first source.
Yeah, absolutely. We've got a lot of speculation.
We're the boss's boss.
So
yeah.
Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Well, I'd like to ask about on which stage are we in possible providing the little arms to Ukraine? I perfectly understand the decision have to be approved by the White House, by the President, but okay, we got this publications, the articles in the press that possibly the Security Council has adopted the recommendation to provide the grant, $47 million grant to Ukraine. It might be from U.S. Department of State money. So can you just provide the information on which stage are we? And secondly, and more important, we got the U.S. military budget right now with $50 million to Ukraine, but it's just one source. From the second hand, it always was the U.S. Department of State money. Mm. I spoke with a couple of staffers in the Congress. They told me the situation is unclear, that firstly it was zero. Right now it should be some amount. Can you just give an update on this?
Okay.
Thank you.
So first off, Ukraine is a situation that we follow very, very carefully and very closely. The secretary put in place Kurt Volker earlier this year to help try to manage the situation in Ukraine as best as possible. And he has made a lot of trips there. As you well know, President Poroshenko made a trip to Washington earlier this year, and the secretary has made various trips to Ukraine as well. You ask about the issue of providing lethal assistance to Ukraine. We have not provided defensive weapons, but yet we have not ruled that out either. We just don't have a lot more to say on that. In terms of the funding that you ask about, I believe part of that would be a Department of Defense issue. Part of that, you indicated maybe a State Department issue. I don't have any comments on what members on the Hill said because I'm just not aware of what they told you. But that's all I have for you right now on that. Okay? Okay. Guys, we have to wrap it up. I'm sorry.
Very sorry.
Thank you so much. It's great to see you all.
That was State Department spokesperson Heather Nauert. at the Washington Foreign Press Center early Wednesday afternoon. Meanwhile, up in New York at the United Nations Security Council, the topic of the recent launch from the DPRK was on the table.
The 18th meeting of the Security Council is called to order. The provisional agenda for this meeting is non-proliferation, Democratic People, Republic of Korea. The agenda is adopted. In accordance with Rule 37 of the Council Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite the representative of the Republic of Korea to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. In accordance with Rule 39 of the Council Provisional Rules of Procedure, I invite Mr. Jeffrey Feltman, Undersecretary General for Political Affairs, to participate in this meeting. It is so decided. The Security Council will now begin its consideration of item 2 of the agenda. And at this meeting, the Security Council will hear a briefing by Mr. Feltman. And I will also brief in my capacity as chair of the Security Council Committee pursuant to Resolution 1718. And I now give the floor to Ms. Jeffrey Feltman.
Mr. President, members of the Security Council, according to the official news agency of the Democratic People's Republic of Korea, the DPRK, and various governmental sources, at approximately 2:48 a.m. local time, on 29 November 2017, the DPRK launched a ballistic missile, which it termed an intercontinental ballistic rocket Hwangsong 15. The missile was reportedly launched from an area north of Pyongyang, covering approximately 950 kilometers and reaching an apogee of around 4,500 kilometers before impacting into the sea in Japan's exclusive economic zone. These parameters indicate that, if flown on a standard trajectory, the missile as configured would have a range in excess of 13,000 kilometers. This is the DPRK's third test of a ballistic missile of apparent intercontinental range in less than 6 months, and its 20th ballistic missile launch this year. The DPRK, again, did not issue any airspace or maritime safety notifications. The official media claimed the DPRK was now, quote, capable of striking the whole mainland of the U.S., end quote. The official media also claimed that the DPRK had, again I quote, finally realized the great historic cause of completing the state nuclear force, the cause of building a rocket power, end quote. Mr. President, this is the 13th time the Council has met to discuss the DPRK in 2017. The DPRK's repeated nuclear and missile tests over the past 2 years have created great tension on the Korean Peninsula and beyond. This dynamic must be reversed. The solution can only be political. Given the grave risks associated with any military confrontation, in exercise of its primary responsibilities, the Security Council needs to do all it can to prevent an escalation. Unity in the Security Council is critical. Security Council unity also creates an opportunity for sustained diplomatic engagement, an opportunity that must be seized in these dangerous times to seek off-ramps and work to create conditions for negotiations. Mr. President, the Secretary General strongly condemns this latest launch. This is a clear violation of Security Council resolutions and shows complete disregard for the united view of the international community. The Secretary General urges the DPRK to desist from taking any further destabilizing steps. The Secretary General reaffirms his commitment to working with all parties to reduce tensions. I called a meeting this morning with the DPRK permanent representative to deliver the Secretary General's message in person. During the meeting, I stressed that there is nothing more dangerous to peace and security in the world than what is happening now on the Korean Peninsula. Mr. President, the Secretary General discussed the situation on the Korean Peninsula with all concerned parties in the margins of the high-level week of the General Assembly. During the Secretary General's meeting with Mr. Ri Yong-ho, Minister for Foreign Affairs of the DPRK, on 23rd September, The SG expressed concern over the tensions on the Korean Peninsula and appealed for de-escalation and full implementation of relevant Security Council resolutions. The Secretary General emphasized the need for a political solution. Mr. President, amidst the heightened tensions, the United Nations and other humanitarian actors play a critical role in saving the lives of the most vulnerable in the DPRK. The needs are increasing, and food security remains a critical concern for 70% of the population. Member states are again reminded of the need to support the life-saving activities carried out by humanitarian organizations in the country. We will continue to closely follow the developments and remain in close coordination with the concerned international organization and with members of this council, as well as other governments concerned. Thank you.
I thank Mr. Feldman for his briefing, and I shall now make a statement in my capacity as the chair of the Security Council Committee pursuant to Resolution 1718. Dear colleagues, I have the honor to brief the Security Council on the activities of the committee established pursuant to Resolution 1718 for the period of 12 September 2017 through 29 November 2017 in accordance with paragraph 12G of the same resolution. The committee strongly condemns the continuing violations by the Democratic People's Republic of Korea. In particular, the ballistic missile launch on 14 September 2017, which flew over Japan, and the launch on 28 November 2017. Following the adoption of Resolution 2375 on 11 September 2017, which significantly expands the scope of the sanctions regime, the committee is engaged in facilitating implementation of all sanctions measures and is continuing its efforts in this regard. As part of the committee's outreach activities, I convened an open briefing with the UN membership on 9 October 2017 to offer a detailed overview of the expanded sanction regime and member states' obligations in this regard. The briefing provided a forum for member states to explore challenges and opportunities they faced and to raise specific questions and concerns while implementing the DPRK sanctions. I also encouraged them to submit their national implementation reports on concrete measures they have taken to effectively implement the resolutions. As of today, the committee has received 102, 89, and 31 national implementation reports on Resolution 2270, 2321, and 2371, respectively. While this submission rate continues to be much higher than under previous resolution regarding the DPRK, it should be recalled that Resolution 2375 requires all member states to submit their national implementation reports within 90 days of its adoption, that is, by 12 December 2017. During the reporting period, the committee received notification from member states informing the committee of amendments to the national legislation in order to ensure consistency with the financial provision of Security Council Resolution 2321 and 2356, and continued to perform its duties through the non-objection procedure envisioned by paragraph 5C of the guidelines of the committee for the conduct of its work. In this regard, on 12 September 2017, the committee approved updates to the informal list of individuals and entities in the Korean language, which incorporated the individuals and entities listed in Annexes 1 and 2 of Resolution 2371. Following the adoption of Resolution 2375, the committee approved further updates to the informal Korean list on 18 October 2017, which incorporate the individual and entities listed in Annexes 1 and 2 of that resolution. In view of the implementation of Resolutions 2270, 2371, and 2375, I am pleased to report that on 29 September 2017, the committee agreed on a list of weapons of mass destruction related items of concern in accordance with paragraph 4 of Security Council Resolution 2375. On 2 October 2017, the committee approved a list of conventional arms-related items in accordance with the requirements set out in paragraph 5 of Security Council Resolution 2375 and reported to the Security Council. In view of updating the CBW-related items, the committee is continuing its consideration. I am also pleased to report that in accordance with paragraph 6 of Resolution 2375, on 3 October 2017, the committee was able to reach an agreement on a list of 4 vessels for designation pursuant to the measures imposed by paragraph 6 of Resolution 2371. With regard to the 1718 sanctions list, the committee approved a technical correction to an entity designated on the 1718 sanction list on 19 October 2017 and is considering requests by an intergovernmental organization pertaining to a designated entity and an individual. During the reporting period, the committee received an exemption request from one member state to allow a one-time entry to Donghae Port, Republic of Korea, for the vessel Petrel 8. On 3 November 2017, the committee approved an exemption to the measures imposed by paragraph 6 of Resolution 2371 and Resolution 2375. The committee continued to receive notification on the implementation of Resolution 2270 relating to coal transportation through the DPRK solely for export from a port of Rajin. The committee was further notified of planned transit shipments of coal through the port of Rajin in accordance with paragraph 8 of Security Council Resolution 2371. On 26 September 2017, the committee received a notification from a member state of imports of iron ore, iron, lead ore, lead, and seafood from the DPRK for the period 6 August to 4 September 2017 in accordance with paragraph 8, 9, and 10 of Security Council Resolution 2371. During the reporting period, the committee received a number of notifications, including on training, scientific cooperation, and granting visas to DPRK nationals to attend meetings and determined whether those activities were in compliance with the sanction regime. The committee continued its consideration proposal for assistance to the DPRK from international organizations on a range of issues, including on the participation of nationals of the DPRK in UN regional meetings and programs, an official country visit to the DPRK to examine implementation of international drug control conventions, and intended donations of IT equipment. I am also pleased to report that the committee concluded its deliberation on implementation assistance notices number 2 and the fact sheet, which were approved on 3 November 2017. On 15 November, the committee further approved implementation assistance notice number 1 and 6. All updated INNs and the fact sheet are available on the committee website. In closing, let me recall that the panel of experts continue to investigate possible violations of the DPRK sanction regime and conducted a number of outreach activities, a list of which is attached to this report as an annex. Finally, while recalling that the primary responsibility for implementing the provision of Resolution 1718, 1874, 2087, 2094, 2270, 2321, 2356, 2371, and 2375 rest with member states, let me reassure you that the committee is committed to facilitating the implementation of these measures with a view to contributing to a peaceful and comprehensive solution to the DPRK issue. The colleague, since it is the last time that I have the honor to present the 90-day report on the 1718 committee activity to the Council, I wish to thank all of you and your delegation for the support my team and I have received over my tenure, which I'm sure you will provide to my successor. I thank you. I now resume my function as President of the Council, and I now give the floor to those Council members who wish to make statements, and I give the floor to the representative of the United States.
Thank you, Mr. President, for your leadership in calling this meeting, as well as thank you for your leadership of the Sanctions Committee. And we appreciate, Mr. Feltman, your briefing as well. This is the ninth time this year that the Security Council has met in reference to North Korea. Last time we spoke in the Security Council about North Korea's development of nuclear weapons, the United States made clear that the future of North Korea was in the hands of its leaders. If they chose the path of peace, the world would live in peace with them. But if they chose the path of defiance, we would respond appropriately. The choice, we said, was theirs. Yesterday, the North Korean regime made a choice. It chose to feed its nuclear aggression. It chose to thumb its nose at the civilized world. It chose to challenge the patience of a world united against its recklessness. And with this choice comes a critical decision point for the rest of the world. The world has responded powerfully to North Korea's outrageous and lawless actions. This council has taken unprecedented measures to stop North Korea's development of a nuclear-tipped ballistic missile. We have leveled the most impactful sanctions that any country has experienced in a generation. We have cut deep into North Korea's major export industries to eliminate the revenue for its illegal missile program. We have reduced its military access to the refined petroleum needed to run its war machine. In addition to our work here in the Security Council, many nations have taken their own strong actions against North Korea's threat to peace. Just this year, as North Korea's behavior has become more intolerable, over 20 countries from every corner of the globe have restricted or ended their diplomatic relations. Mexico, Peru, Italy, Spain, and Kuwait have expelled North Korea's ambassadors from their countries. Portugal and the United Arab Emirates have suspended diplomatic relations. The Philippines and Taiwan have suspended all trade with North Korea. Singapore, formerly North Korea's seventh largest trading partner, has cut all trade ties. Uganda has halted all military and security ties. The European Union, Australia, South Korea, and Japan have made additional sacrifices for peace and security by going well beyond what the Security Council requires. All of the countries that have taken actions to isolate North Korea have acted out of deep concern about the regime's dangerous refusal to abandon its nuclear program. They have selflessly put the security of all of us above their individual political and economic interests. They have won the gratitude of the international community for their responsible actions. Regrettably, not all countries have done the same. All UN member states are, at the very minimum, obligated to fully implement all UN sanctions. But we know that's not happening in every case. This council has banned coal exports from North Korea. And yet, we have reports of the regime continuing to smuggle coal into neighboring Asian countries using deceptive tactics to mask the coal's origins. This council has required that all refined petroleum imports into North Korea not exceed the annual cap, and we banned ship-to-ship transfers. And yet, we see North Korea illegally obtaining refined petroleum from neighboring states through ship-to-ship transfers in the Yellow Sea and the Sea of Japan. There are countries that are continuing to fund the North Korean nuclear program by violating UN sanctions and obstructing our efforts. The world knows who many of them are. As successful as we have been in leveling multilateral sanctions against it, the North Korean regime continues to test new and more powerful missiles. And as it does, it continues its march toward a functional nuclear arsenal. The continuing development of these missile systems demands that countries further isolate the Kim regime. So today, we call on all nations to cut off all ties with North Korea. In addition to fully implementing all UN sanctions, all countries should sever diplomatic relations with North Korea and limit military, scientific, technical, or commercial cooperation. They must also cut off trade with the regime by stopping all imports and exports and expel all North Korean workers. Just last week, the world was given a stark reminder of the barbarity of the North Korean regime when one of its own soldiers fled the country. Even more than the dramatic video of the soldier's escape, more shocking was the soldier's medical condition unrelated to his bullet wounds. While being treated by a South Korean medical team, doctors discovered that the soldier had parasites and uncooked corn kernels in his digestive tract. Clear evidence that the North Korean regime is unwilling to properly feed even its own high-ranking military troops. This is the incomprehensible nature of North Korea. Yesterday's missile launch was more advanced than previous launches. No one can doubt that this threat is growing. No one can doubt that North Korean dictator is getting more aggressive in his obsession for nuclear power. Yesterday, the regime declared itself a nuclear power, saying that it, quote, completed the state nuclear force tipped with a super large heavy warhead capable of striking the whole mainland of the United States. But the North Korean regime missed something very important. As we have said before, being a nuclear power comes with certain standards. It comes with being responsible enough to know that you don't threaten other countries with nuclear weapons. You don't starve your own people in order to fund nuclear weapons. You don't bully and play games with nuclear weapons. The regime has shown time and again that it doesn't want to talk. Kim didn't even speak with President Xi's envoy when he was sent to talk to the regime. It has emphatically said it will not eliminate its nuclear production. And North Korea is in clear violation of multiple Security Council resolutions. We are once again at a time of reckoning. We have some options. First, we should continue to treat North Korea as the international pariah it has become by taking its UN rights and privileges away, including its voting powers. Second, we know the main driver of its nuclear production is oil. Through sanctions, we have cut off 90% of North Korean trade and 30% of its oil. But the crude oil remains. The major supplier of that oil is China. In 2003, China actually stopped the oil to North Korea. Soon after, North Korea came to the table. We need China to do more. President Trump called Chinese President Xi this morning and told him that we have come to the point that China must cut off the oil from North Korea. That would be a pivotal step in the world's effort to stop this international pariah. As I mentioned, many countries have made some big economic and political sacrifices by cutting ties with North Korea. They did that to serve the peace and security of all of us. We now turn to President Xi to also take that stand. We believe he has an opportunity to do the right thing for the benefit of all countries. China must show leadership and follow through. China can do this on its own, or we can take the oil situation into our own hands. The dictator of North Korea made a choice yesterday that brings the world closer to war, not farther from it. We have never sought war with North Korea, and still today, we do not seek it. If war does come, it will be because of continued acts of aggression like we witnessed yesterday. And if war comes, make no mistake, the North Korean regime will be utterly destroyed. The nations of the world have it within their power to further isolate, diminish, and, God willing, reverse the dangerous course of the North Korean regime. We must all do our part to make that happen. Thank you.
I thank the representative of the United States for her statement. I now give the floor to the representative of Japan.
Thank you, Mr. President. I would like to begin by thanking the President for convening this meeting, jointly requested by the U.S. and the ROK and Japan. I thank Mr. Feltman for his briefing. I also thank Ambassador Cowdiff as chair of the 17-18 committee for the presentation of the 90-day report to the Council. On November 29th, North Korea once again completely ignored the repeated calls of the international community to abandon its nuclear and missile development programs and launched another ballistic missile with the range of ICBM in flagrant violation of relevant Security Council resolutions. North Korea later claimed that it conducted a successful launch of the new ICBM Hwasong-15 with, quote, technical capabilities far superior to the previous Hwasong-14, unquote. North Korea even stated that they can load the heaviest warhead and strike anywhere in the mainland United States. This launch is totally unacceptable. Japan lodged a strong protest against North Korea immediately after the launch and condemned the act in the strongest terms. Japan demands that North Korea immediately cease all ballistic missile launches and nuclear development programs and provocations. Japan will never tolerate a nuclear-armed North Korea. The missile reached the highest ever apogee of well over 4,000 kilometers, flew for 53 minutes, and fell within the Japanese exclusive economic zone, approximately 250 kilometers west of Aomori Prefecture. Local fishery association hastened to check safety of all the fishing vessels that were operating in the sea at the time of the launch. We were lucky that nobody got hurt. However, it does not change the fact that this was an extremely dangerous and irresponsible act by North Korea. This ballistic missile launch with the range of ICBM was the third of its kind this year. Considering its estimated range, it has become abundantly clear that this is not merely a regional threat, but a clear global threat to all member states. This most recent provocation made it ever more evident that North Korea is nowhere near ready to give up its nuclear programs, nor is it interested in coming back to a meaningful dialogue. There is no other choice for us but to work together to put maximum pressure on North Korea so that it alters its course of action and works towards denuclearization. Due to this new launch, some Security Council members may feel frustrated. The sanctions do not seem to be working yet. However, the full implementation of all the existing Security Council resolutions, including the recent adopted 2371 and 2375, can bring about significant impact on North Korea's calculus. It is extremely important for the Council to urge all member states to fully implement the relevant resolutions. Without faithful implementation, we cannot achieve the intended policy change of North Korea. We should also not lose sight of the fact that it is the North Korean regime that is diverting its resources into pursuing nuclear weapons and ballistic missiles instead of the welfare of its people, while people in North Korea have great unmet needs. We must send a clear, consistent message that it is North Korea that needs to change. Japan will continue to work very closely with Council members and all other member states to reach a comprehensive solution to the problems related to North Korea. I thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Japan for his statement and now give the floor to the representative of the United Kingdom.
Thank you, Mr. President. We've met too many times this year to discuss the DPRK's flagrant violations of unanimous Security Council decisions, and I'm deeply disappointed that we have to meet again today after yet another such violation. For the third time, the DPRK regime have tested an intercontinental ballistic missile. Based on an initial assessment, this missile flew higher and for longer than any of the previous DPRK missile tests. So we condemn, in the strongest terms, North Korea's actions and its continued pursuit of its illegal ballistic missile and nuclear program. Today we summoned the DPRK ambassador in London to convey our deep concern at this reckless behaviour. The latest missile launch is not a one-off. It follows 19 previous launches this year and North Korea's sixth nuclear test in September. The latest violation demonstrates once more North Korea's disregard for our collective security and the international obligations that all of us, as law-abiding states, take upon ourselves. We have condemned the DPRK many times before. The Security Council, along with the wider international community, must now redouble our efforts to persuade the DPRK to change course. This year, through this council, we have worked together to implement measures to curtail the regime's illegal ballistic missile and nuclear programs. In developing these measures, we have ensured that the humanitarian needs of the population are protected. It is not the people of North Korea that are threatening global security. It is the regime. But our actions are in stark contrast to the brutality of that regime towards its long-suffering people, who are held hostage to the whims of its reckless leadership. When these measures that we have implemented, when they're fully implemented, we know that they have an effect. And we know, too, that we must exhaust every avenue to resolve the issue peacefully and diplomatically. We all hope to avoid the need to use military force. This would not only be devastating for the citizens of North Korea, but also for global stability and for all of us. Therefore, we must all pursue the existing measures and all other diplomatic avenues available to us, fully and without delay. The existing measures are only effective if robustly implemented in full by all members of the UN, starting with all of us in this Security Council. Many states do carry out these responsibilities diligently, but it is clear that more must and can be done. The reporting deadline for our Resolution 2371 was on the 3rd of November, but by the 21st of November, only 29 member states had submitted reports on their implementation of the measures in that resolution. Considering the size of the threat, this is simply not good enough. The reporting deadline for Resolution 2375 is on the 12th of December. We call on all UN member states to meet this deadline and provide an update on the implementation of those measures. We will continue to work with partners around the world to further improve enforcement of the existing measures. We welcome the valuable work of the panel of experts, part of our shared efforts to stop the DPRK's illegal programs. It provides us with information that we need to implement all relevant measures. And we urge all states to cooperate fully with the panel and to take swift and robust action in response to the panel's recommendations. If they do not, then they are helping the DPRK regime to threaten the world. I focus so far on our shared efforts to persuade the DPRK regime to change course. But in closing, I must emphasize that it is the DPRK regime alone that bears responsibility for these programs and therefore for its international isolation. It has chosen this path. It can change course. A better future is possible for the country and its benighted people. It must now take the responsible decision to step back towards the negotiating table and to comply with the obligations set by our community of nations. Thank you.
I thank the representative of the United Kingdom for his statement and now give the floor to the representative of Egypt.
Mr. President, Egypt continues to strongly condemn the activities of North Korea of nuclear armament development and launch of ballistic missiles in violation of Security Council resolutions. And this threatens the international and regional peace and security. This is based on Egypt's permanent commitment to the need to preserve the credibility of the NPT regime and the credibility of the Security Council. Egypt is also keen on having the United Nations system dealing with sincerity and decisiveness with any threat to the non-proliferation regime without discrimination or double standards. Egypt believes that the repeated violations by the DPRK of Security Council resolutions pose a threat to international peace and security. They also threaten the regional stability in Northeast Asia and the national security of countries that are friendly to Egypt, such as Japan and the Republic of Korea. Egypt calls on the DPRK to immediately cease all violations and measures that run counter to Security Council resolutions. And we call on North Korea to abstain from any escalation that would lead to more tension and instability that would threaten international peace, international regional peace and security. Mr. President, Egypt reiterates once anew the need for Security Council and all UN organs to assume their responsibilities in this respect through endeavoring to reach a sustainable, peaceful settlement to the situation that raises grave concern in the Korean Peninsula. This settlement should include the total elimination of all nuclear weapons and reaching sustainable peace between the two Koreas in accordance with the provisions of Security Council resolutions, including endeavoring to revive the six-party talks and the negotiations so as to exit this vicious circle of continued violations by North Korea of Security Council resolutions. Mr. President, in closing, I would like to express our appreciation to the commendable efforts that you have made, along with the members of the Italian delegation, as the chair of the Security Council Resolution 1718 Committee during the membership of Italy in the Security Council. These efforts have had a positive bearing on facilitating the work of this important committee that plays a critical role in following up the relevant Security Council resolutions on the DPRK and helping member states to take necessary measures. Your efforts have yielded significant successes despite the technical complexities relating to the implementation of this unprecedented set of international sanctions. On this occasion, I would like to thank you for your report today on the activities of the committee over the past 90 days. This report underscores the clear dynamism of this committee, which we accord great importance in light with Egypt's commitment to accurate implementation of relevant Security Council resolutions. Thank you, Mr. President.
I thank the representative of Egypt for his statement and also for his kind words. Thank you. I'd like now to give the floor to the representative of Sweden.
Thank you, Mr. President. I thank you, and I would also like to thank Undersecretary General Feltman for his briefing. Sweden condemns yesterday's intercontinental ballistic missile test in the strongest terms. It constitutes a clear threat to international peace and security, an unacceptable provocation, and a clear breach of DPRK's international obligations in defiance of numerous Security Council resolutions. DPRK's actions represent a threat not only to its own region, but for all regions. We again urge the DPRK to heed this Council's decisions that it cease provocations, fulfill its international obligations, engage in meaningful dialogue, and abandon its nuclear and missile programs in a complete, verifiable, and irreversible manner, and return to the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty and the IAEA safeguards. Sweden fully supports the relevant resolutions adopted unanimously by this Council in relation to the DPRK. It is important that the Council remains united and that the Security Council resolutions are swiftly implemented by all countries so as to ensure their full effect. At the same time, Sanctions alone will not resolve the situation on the Korean Peninsula. We need to pave the way for peaceful, diplomatic, and political solution. Therefore, in parallel to effectively and rigorously implementing the sanctions regime, we must urgently undertake further work to reduce tensions so as to advance the prospects for a comprehensive settlement. Mr. President, now turning to the report of the 1718 Sanctions Committee, I would like to thank you and your team for the excellent work as chair of this important committee. The committee has a critical role in effectively implementing the resolutions adopted by this Council in order for them to have the desired effect. The committee and its panel of experts should continue its outreach to Member States on sanctions implementation, as well as to support their capacity-building efforts. Some further efforts are already underway, but more can be done, and we look forward to continued discussions on how to enhance the effectiveness of the restrictive measures. The responsibility to protect and uphold the well-being of its people indisputably falls with the government of DPRK. Yet, while the DPRK regime diverts critical resources into expensive weapons programs, its people continue to suffer from serious human rights violations and a grave humanitarian situation. The humanitarian situation remains of serious concern. The measures adopted by the Council were never intended to have a negative effect on the humanitarian assistance. Therefore, recent reports that the sanctions are having adverse consequences and on humanitarian organizations' ability to respond to these urgent humanitarian needs are deeply concerning. These challenges need to be addressed and humanitarian principles need to be adhered to. In this regard, we look forward to discussions in the committee with input from the panel of experts and relevant UN bodies on how to ensure that the resolutions are implemented as intended and rigorously, while at the same time ensuring that humanitarian aid reaches those in need of assistance. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Sweden for his statement, also for his kind words that are to the presidency, and I give now the floor to the representative of Ukraine.
Mr. President, I thank Undersecretary General Feldman for his briefing on the latest intercontinental ballistic missile launch by DPRK. This launch, in blatant violation of numerous Security Council resolutions, fosters the growing nuclear threat in the region. Despite immense political and diplomatic efforts to halt the North Korean WMD programs, we have seen no signs whatsoever of DPRK's intention to change its behavior. The North Korean irresponsible policy has already seriously undermined the non-proliferation regime as a whole. In this regard, I wish to recall statement of the Minister of Foreign Affairs of Ukraine from 29th November, which states inter alia that Ukraine resolutely condemns the launch of the new intercontinental ballistic missile Hwangsong 15, capable to carry nuclear payload, conducted on November 28, 2017 by the DPRK. This deliberate act of Pyongyang aimed at development of more powerful missiles as well as its threats to use nuclear weapons seriously endanger not only the security of North Korea's immediate neighbors, but also global security and stability far beyond the Korean Peninsula. Ukraine aligns itself with all states who have condemned this dangerous act of Pyongyang and calls upon the DPRK leadership to stop its provocations immediately. I join the previous speakers in commending your efforts, Mr. President, as a chair of the 1718 Committee, aimed at ensuring full implementation of the Security Council resolutions related to DPRK. We welcome significant expansion of the relevant sanction regime according to the recent Council's decisions, as well as dynamic outreach activities conducted by both the Italian chair and the panel of experts. Unconditional and full compliance with resolutions is one of the key prerequisites to lower the level of the nuclear threat in the region and to curb the ability of the North Korea to carry out further provocations. In this regard, we endorse constructive work of the committee during the reporting period, in particular the update of 1718 control lists in accordance with resolutions 2371 and 2375, and the adoption of several implementation assistance notices. The specific and result-oriented measures are important for strengthening objectiveness and effectiveness and efficiency of the current sanctions regime. To conclude, I wish to stress that yesterday's provocation dampened hopes for resuming a dialogue on denuclearization of the North Korea. Frankly, after 2.5 months of no tests and launches, there appeared a glimmer of hope that such a dialogue is not out of reach. However, yesterday's act clearly demonstrated that the North Korean regime is not interested in talks. Instead, it is striving recklessly to entertain idea fix of obtaining the status of nuclear weapon states, which will never be recognized or tolerated by the international community anyway. Mr. President, Ukraine stands ready to engage constructively with all partners to change the current situation and to move closer to denuclearization of the Korean Peninsula. I thank you.
I thank the representative of Ukraine for his statement and for his, also for his kind words.
You're listening to Weekday World from CPR, Community Public Radio. I'm your host, Don DeBar.